democratic governance in Sudan, you know, and so that constantly puts them in a position where they support, you know, SAF, Sudan Armed Forces, you know, as potentials, you know, rulers.
A sentiment partly echoed by Dr. Edgar Githua, a lecturer at the United States International University and Strathmore University.
The African Union and the world in general, looking at this situation, needs to, you know, step up, need to actually just call out Russia, tell Russia, pull out the Wagner group, get it out. Egypt, I think it's an easier group to deal with. The U.S. has a lot of leverage with Egypt. Libya, Khalifa can be told to back down also. And the UAE can be told to back off.
Some of the countries mentioned offered to mediate the crisis and denied involvement in the war. Githua says the international community has to change strategy.
Like they're coming to the battlefield with renewed vigor. And of course, the people who are suffering are the Sudanese people. I have a feeling the world has no choice. At some point, there's got to be some external intervention. And the external intervention from me will be either a peacekeeping force that creates a humanitarian corridor to just try and restore normalcy.
The Jeddah talks, overseen by the United States and Saudi Arabia, have recently been suspended. And the most recent offer by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, to mediate the crisis has also stalled because one of the generals said he didn't want the Kenyan president leading the group that is made up of South Sudan, Djibouti, Ethiopia, and Somalia. And that's a problem, says Macharia Munene, professor of history and international relations at USIU in Nairobi.
One of the generals, Baram, has said he doesn't want anything to do with him. So he's going over and prefers Salva Kiir. Yes, the team is the NIGAD team, and it's supposed to be the lead. To lead the team. But if one of the participants, the major player, doesn't want anything to about him leading the team, there's something wrong.
For now, fighting is showing no signs of letting up. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Botswana and the London-based International Diamond Consortium, De Beers, have ended uncertainty over their long-standing partnership after announcing a 10-year extension to their diamond sales agreement. For viewing, Kodisi Dube reports from the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
In a joint statement released late Friday, Botswana and De Beers indicated their sales agreement has been extended until 2034, while the mining license will be in place for the next 25 years. No value was given for the agreement, and there were no further details on the allocation of rough stones, but the government and De Beers say the new deal reflects the aspirations of the people of Botswana. Addressing the media this week, Botswana's Minerals Minister, Lefoko Moahi, indicated the deal was imminent and that it would be a favorable position for both parties.
We are making headway. We are very optimistic that we all are fully aware of what it means to Botswana, what it means to Beers, what it means to the diamond industry. So we believe that we will gravitate towards something that will be a shared win, if not a win-win for all of us.
Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi held a firm position during the negotiations, saying his country was prepared to walk away if a favorable deal were not reached. Under the previous arrangement, Botswana was allocated 25% of rough diamonds mined through Debswana, a joint venture between the government and De Beers. Last year, De Beers obtained 70% of its rough diamonds from Botswana. Diamond mining contributes approximately one-third of Botswana's gross domestic product and is a major factor in the Southern African nation's rise as the sixth richest country on the continent. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half, Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sports in Morocco, where Mali's under-23 national team reached the semi-finals of the CAF under-23 Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2023 after a commanding 2-0 victory over Niger on Saturday. The match took place at the Prince Mali Abdullah Sports Complex in Rabat as part of the third and final round of group stage matches of the competition in Morocco. Mali will now face the host country Morocco in the semi-finals in Rabat on Tuesday. Defending champions Egypt secured passage into the semi-finals after a hard-fought 2-0 victory over Gabon in a match played at the Ibn Battuta Stadium in Tangier on Saturday night. Earlier on Friday, Guinea secured a place in the semi-finals after coming back from a goal down to draw 1-1 against Ghana, who crashed out of the competition. In athletics, Athletics Kenya has announced that some 160 athletes will compete at the Athletics Kenya trials that will be held from July 7th to the 8th at the Nyanyo Stadium. The federation will use the two-day event to pick a team that will fly the Kenyan flag in this year's World Championships, slated for August 19th to the 27th in Budapest, Hungary. AK President Jackson Tui said the athletes invited for the trials have met all the anti-doping requirements set by the Athletics Integrity Unit. At the same time, Tui said that athletes who have white card must also compete during the trials.
In case an athlete's name does not appear in the list of invitation, this invited athlete, and has completed the testing requirement, and has proof of the same, their eligibility will be considered.
In basketball news, Nigeria's men's basketball national team, the Tigers, on Saturday bounced back from their opening day defeat to Guinea in the 2023 FIBA African qualifiers for Zone 3 to beat Benin 78-51 in the second game of Match Day 2. The Tigers lost 65-62 to Guinea on Friday and faced an uphill task to qualify for the tournament proper. Ogo Odaudu's side needed a win to keep their hopes alive, and they did that in style at the Palace du Sport in Trekkerville in Abidjan, Ivory Coast. Staying with basketball, the Nigerian Basketball Federation says it has appointed coach Rena Wakama as head coach of Nigeria's senior women's national basketball team, the Tigress. The Tigress have been without a head coach since Otis Hugley resigned from his role with the five-time AfroBasket champions in 2022. Wakama was a former Nigerian national team player and currently an assistant coach at the Stony Brook University, New York. In swimming news, 26 clubs are taking part in this year's Uganda National Swimming Championships that got underway on Friday. The three-day championships that will climax this Sunday is a qualification event for national swimmers targeting to represent the country at the World Swimming Aquatic Championships and the World Aquatic Championship due next month. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa's the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Owing to the cacophony of misinformation, disinformation, alternative facts, and willful speculation regarding recent events in Russia, discussions, troops marching towards Moscow, African policymakers, researchers, and other relevant concerned citizens must do their utmost to unravel what messages are being conveyed by info warfare. The great Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who pioneered Britain to victory in the Second World War, once said at the beginning of the war, and I quote, "Truth is so precious in war that it must be protected by a battalion of lies. And this should always be kept in mind in Africa." For example, last Thursday, the foreign minister of South Africa in a press statement stated that as far as our country is concerned, South Africa, there was an attempted mutiny in Russia, and that was all over, and the relations between South Africa and Russia remains the same. Shortly afterwards, someone in France, correspondent or whatever it is, added that the foreign minister of South Africa was concealing her actual feelings because she does not want to get into confrontation with Vladimir Putin, the president. Now imagine, the foreign minister of South Africa has an ambassador in Moscow, she has good staff members in the embassy, and they can better follow events in and around Moscow than someone millions of miles away trying to divine what's in her mind. This is the dilemma that Africans are always placed. In these circumstances, it will be necessary for African politicians and policymakers to strive hard to find what are stubborn facts. So let's see what are the stubborn facts that we can find with regards to the events of last week in Russia and Ukraine. We were informed by Russia that he had been able to negotiate an agreement and that the Wagner group will return to their base. He also said that he was fully aware that should the column proceed towards Moscow, they would be crushed by the Soviet or by Russia. We also now know that President Putin confirmed that the mutiny was over and that the punishment he had promised when he first spoke had been set aside, and the Wagner groups and its leader, Prigozhin, will go into exile in Belarusia. He also said that Prigozhin could take with him whatever of his troops he would like to go to Belarusia. Going forward, African states and its people should continue to keep an open mind to the rest of the international community, but should keep always in mind that vigilance is the price of freedom. And thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
You know, everybody's a bit dumb. So why they do this song to teach you the basic step?
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the country.
So jump to the center, move one leg like this.
One leg.
plans. Now everybody go talk breakfast. Shayo.
To discuss, cause I think we need my people, some we doubt, and we doubt. I'm a me, I feel that doubt, and I'm confused, and I'm confused, and I'm confused, and I'm mind that you talk. I put my life into my job, and I know I'm in trouble. She manipulates my love.
That was our Sunday Music Spark. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, before you go out with a widow, make sure you know what killed the